Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society, we open up PictoChat and type out the ABCs of Nintendo DS. It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I am joined, as I am always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell. Mark, how's it going?
It's going great. Still expressing the same feelings that I had on Tuesday, where it's great to be back. But
sounds like there's a but. Yes, well, there. I knew it. Not, it's good to be back, but what?
No. Not. There's no but to being back recording this show with you.
Yes.
But it's just like, in general, I put off so many things from before.
Yes.
I left for vacation and being like, do you know what? I'm just going to worry about that afterwards.
That's 2024 Mark's
exactly.
problem.
Right. And now I am 2024 Mark. Right. And those have all become my problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm going through some of that right now too, where I'm like, oh, this is stuff I could have been working on when like, things were slow and there was like a holiday and I wasn't traveling or anything. But I didn't.
No. And I do this every year.
Yeah.
And I never learn.
But you always survive. Right?
That's so true.
So like, who cares?
Yeah.
It's fine. What could you possibly be behind on? Speaking of things we could possibly be behind on, patreon.com/Nintendo Cartridge Society. You should go there if you would like to support us. And if you do so at the 8-bit or 16-bit levels, you can get access to our once a month episodes of miniseries that are on various topics. This month, this year, we are starting NCS Arcade, wherein every month we are playing a game from the Nintendo Switch Online or Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack that Mark and I have never beaten before.
That's right. The first one we're going to be playing and discussing is The Legend of Zelda, The Minish Cap.
Minish.
I did look it up, and it is, in fact, The Minish Cap.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. So we are going back and retroactively stapling the definite article onto the subtitle there.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm super excited to talk about it, and that episode will be coming out later this month. So get in the Patreon, and you can check out that episode, plus we have done NCS Detective Club, where we talked about the great detective shows of television, and NCS Goes Broadway, where we talked about some great Broadway musicals.
On the subject, Mark, of NCS Detective Club, did you check out the new Monk movie that came out?
No, I haven't yet.
I haven't either. I feel like I should. Because we enjoyed Monk.
We did enjoy Monk.
I kept wanting to say Psych, even though I knew that wasn't right. They've made a couple Psych movies.
We
should check all these out.
Yes.
Also, you listeners should check out our Discord. If you would like an invitation, you can email us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com. When you can have fun conversations with us. Want to give a shout out to our new patron, Kyle Seaborn. Thank you, Kyle, so much. And thank you to everyone who has supported us on Patreon. We appreciate it tremendously. Also, I want to plug something. Mark, do you remember a couple of years ago when I did this thing with interviews with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles creators?
Yes.
And then I wrote an issue of Transformers.
Yes.
And then I stopped talking about doing stuff with comics at all for like years. Remember that? Well, it turns out that I am, in fact, writing a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles source book. It's like an encyclopedia for the current run of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It covers almost 300 issues of the comic book series. It's coming out in 4 volumes. Volume 1 comes out in February 21st, I believe. I think we're still going to hit that date. Maybe we won't. I don't know. But if you want it, it would be a good idea to go to your comic book store and pre-order it. It is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles source book issue 1, written by me.
Super exciting. Can't wait to check this out.
Let me tell you, the first issue, 96 pages long.
Amazing.
So, you know, just expect a lot. volume wise, quality wise too. I mean, I think I did a good job. But all right, Mark, we are doing an ABCs today. We are doing the ABCs of the Nintendo DS. Let's dig in. Mark, why are we doing this? Why are we celebrating the DS right now?
Well, 2024 is the 20th anniversary of the Nintendo DS.
Mm-hmm.
Plus,
We got two reasons.
Plus, coming out next week is the like remake of a Nintendo DS game. And its
sequel on Wii that was never released in North America.
Yes, that's right. And that is called
Another Code?
Yeah. We always get this wrong.
Yeah. Another Code.
Recollection for Nintendo Switch.
Yes. And the original game is also like, what is the name of the first game in the Another Code recollection?
It was called Trace Memories.
Yes.
In North America.
Okay.
But it's called Another Code 2 Memories.
Got it. Okay. Okay. All right. So we've got all of that established.
Uh-huh.
And maybe those will come up in our ABCs of the Nintendo DS.
I never played it, so probably not.
Hey, me neither. So same. But I do like and I think we'll probably get into some of our like specifics, some of our history with the DS as we go through the ABCs. But I think you and I both approached the DS at sort of interesting points in our gaming lives, right?
Yeah.
Like for me, it was kind of a, you know, that it came out, or like the DS Lite was coming out as I was getting to the end of my time in college. And like college was sort of a gaming dead zone for me, where I was just like too busy to really like, and too busy and too poor to really like invest in games. Like I just remember it being it and the Wii being like the sort of like twin things welcoming back into gaming, being like, no, games can be something different than just like violent shooter style games, which is what like the industry had sort of become.
Yeah, I mean definitely during the DS and Wii era, it was all simultaneously the era of the Space Marine, like the ball.
Yes,
you know, Space Marine and like
Space Marine,
a first person or third person shooter. Mm-hmm. Everything was really desaturated.
Yes,
and but for in the Nintendo DS and the Wii presented a very different future vision for like gaming's future.
Yeah,
than what was being offered on a lot of the other consoles at the time. For me, I was heavily invested in the Game Boy Advance, and I had a GameCube, and was, you know, like, I played Resident Evil 4 and things like that, but the release of the Nintendo DS, and then the Wii, and, I mean, honestly, that whole generation was a renaissance in gaming for me. Like, I had a Xbox 360 and a Wii and a Nintendo DS, and I eventually got a PlayStation 3. You know what I mean? Like, I was just playing a ton of video games during this era.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, just like the, it was the high tide raises all boats sort of thing, where like the Wii style games that were like accessible to everyone and DS style games that were accessible to, you know, more players, just kind of made more people interested in games. And you know, I feel like just like the, I don't know, I feel like everything started to get good right then.
Yeah.
So the DS is sort of the vanguard for all of this, because it's a couple years before the Wii, which means it's also a couple years before the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. So like I kind of view it as like the first turning point in like the change from like the 90s to even though I know like GameCube and, you know, like a lot of those come out in the 2000s. But like that's the generational cultural shift in games as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I also think I agree with that completely. I also think that the thing that the Nintendo DS kind of foretold was the explosion in video games in general. And that is like through mobile gaming.
Yes.
You have to remember that the Nintendo DS released like 2 or 3 years before the iPhone was even a thing, or yeah, before the iPhone had an app store.
It's three years before the iPhone. The Lite beats the iPhone to market.
And so, like, this idea of accessible gaming,
yep,
that anybody can do with, like, through a touch screen.
America Ferrera can play it on set.
The DS was a vanguard for this. And eventually, those are the things that, like, ate Nintendo's lunch when it came to this kind of blue ocean strategy. Right. But at the time, the Nintendo DS was kind of like...
They were the only one at the buffet.
Basically.
Yeah.
One thing we've got to add before we get into the A to Z's, or the ABC's, just so nobody is disappointed, we're just doing part one.
This is part one. We're doing A through M today, and then N through Z next week. Because it turns out when we each bring 26 things to talk about, we're here for a long time.
Yeah.
So, it's this is part one, and we will... look, I think they're both going to be good episodes. To this point, I've only prepared my part one. But as I was, like, looking around and thinking about stuff, I was like, oh, but this has got to be my P. This has got to be my whatever. So I'm excited for next week as well. I think these are going to be fun episodes.
I think so, too. And part of it is because the Nintendo DS is one of my favorite systems of all time.
Yeah.
I have, and because it was, like, a time when I had a lot of opportunity to play video games, so I was playing a lot of video games on a lot of different systems, and, you know, being able to have a Xbox 360 and a PlayStation 3 and a Nintendo DS and a Nintendo Wii, like, the different experiences you can have on all those different platforms, it was just a great time to be playing video games, and I have a lot of fond memories of the Nintendo DS.
Well, let's kick it off with the beginning of the alphabet. Mark, we're talking about A. would you like to go first, or shall I?
Go for it.
So for my A, and look, what I'm about to say is going to sound inflammatory, but I don't mean it that way. America First is my A. The Nintendo DS came out in North America first.
Crazy.
It came out about 2 weeks before the Japanese release of it. In Japan, it came out December 2nd, and in North America, it came out November 21st, both in 2024. Now, I understand that likely this is just a function of, like, the way commerce in North America in 2004 worked, that it needed to be out before Black Friday, November 21st would be the Sunday before Thanksgiving, and therefore also the Sunday before Black Friday. And if it came out on December 2nd, that would be missing this huge shopping weekend during a time when that still really mattered. I think you and I had a conversation recently about how, like, Black Friday doesn't feel like it's the same, doesn't have the same, like, impact now as it used to. This is when it really did have that same impact. So I think that's the only reason why it came out earlier in the U.S. Is there another example of Nintendo hardware, like main hardware, not like a revision or whatever, that came out in the States first?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't think so. Like, everything else, like, before that, Japan first makes sense, and then after, it's like, no, global launch,
right,
for everything. So yeah, just a weird little artifact that it came to the Americas first.
My A is for Ace Attorney. Ace Attorney, like Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney series, a series of, like, point and click adventure games, detective games. Yeah. I don't know what we call them.
Yeah.
I feel like I struggle with this every time we talk about any of these types of games. But because
he's not a detective, he's an attorney.
He's not a detective. There is a detective in the game.
Yes.
But
Is that the game where Herlock Sholmes is the detective?
And that is in the, what is it called?
The Apollo Justice games?
No, that's not Apollo Justice. Okay. Apollo Justice is like a direct sequel. It's the one, it's like the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles that takes place
in
the past.
Right.
Yeah. And yes, that series
Herlock Sholmes is. Okay.
Yep. The Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney games had originated on the Game Boy Advance, but only in Japan. And they were local. The first three were localized for the United States for the first time on the Nintendo DS. And that's where I experienced them. And I love these games.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other parts of the franchise that I haven't played as much. But these first three games, hearing the music now, there's a playlist that I go to on YouTube all the time that's like Phoenix Wright, like study music. Mm-hmm. And I will listen to that while I'm working. I find it so motivational. It is such a fun series, has a really good sense of humor. I like detective stories or crime solve-y things.
Yeah, sure,
you know,
sure.
The characters are fun. The writing is fun. It's just a all around really good time. And I have very fond memories of playing it on the Nintendo DS.
To feedback to our narrative of this being the sort of proto iPhone gaming device, that all these games are available on iOS now.
Yeah.
So that's the natural, it makes more sense for them to be on a phone. But that didn't exist yet.
Yep.
So here they are on the Nintendo DS. Both of us with excellent A's here, I think. Mark, your B.
My B is for book.
Oh.
So one of the things that was...
Book mode.
Yes, especially looking back on the Nintendo DS. You know, because we had this brief... Even the 3DS wasn't really as experimental and inventive as the DS era was.
Right.
Where we had this... first of its kind dual screened gaming handheld console, and people were just finding new and interesting ways to use it. So
and they gave it so many novel input ways to interface with it. But yeah, the sort of book revelation that you didn't even need to hold it the way you think you needed to hold it
right
is wild,
and you used in so many different ways. So mm-hmm. sure, you had learning games or those sorts of things brain training, but then you also had software, because again, this was a handheld device for everybody. So you had software that was just, hey, here's 100 public domain classic novels,
yes,
and they're on this cart and you can read books this way. Then there were games Ninja Gaiden Dragon Sword, which you held in book mode, but still with the touchscreen on the right, and you were controlling the character that way, and everything was, the action was vertical.
Rocket Slime, the Dragon Quest game, or Bowser's Inside Story, where you would tilt it to the side and put it in book mode from time to time. There were a million different ways to employ and deploy this book mode, and it was always cool when you encountered something that did it.
Yeah, and it was something that had you could never do in video game consoles before, and you haven't really been doing since.
No, right. I mean, the closest thing is remember there's that flip grip for the Nintendo Switch where you can put the Joy-Cons on sideways, so that you're holding the thing vertically, so you can emulate the sort of vertical
monitor. For an arcade shooter or something that,
or really any most early Nintendo arcade games use a vertical monitor, like the original Donkey Kong does, and a bunch of them do. So if you really want to play it in the right aspect ratio without losing a lot of screen real estate, that flip grip is the way to do it.
And I feel if you want a clear understanding of the difference between where video games in the wider culture were in the Nintendo DS era and the 3DS era, it was that the 3DS, even though it had the same capabilities, was just not really used this way. There were not,
right?
I'm sure there were probably some, but there were not as many releases of just hey, here's books you can read, here are cooking tutorials, that sort of thing.
But because it was a little bit more more invested in the AR of it all, right? Because it had the 3D camera, the dual front-facing cameras, and that's the 3DS is where you have the tour of the Louvre on it, right?
Yes, yeah. That is true.
So there were, but not not book mode, strictly speaking, which,
there were still remnants of it. But the majority of that had moved on to smartphones by the time that the 3DS came out.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Because, you don't expect people to take their 3DSs to a museum. unless to do Street Pass. Mark, my B is related. I thought about not having Brain Age be my B, but like, huh? Like, it's Brain Age, Train Your Brain in Minutes a Day, hosted by Dr. Kawashima?
Something like that, yeah.
Which was just, I remember being like just absolutely obsessed with this thing. And like, not even really like, was I having fun with these like tiny little brain teasing puzzles that would then insult me and say that my brain is 70 years old. Maybe I was having fun. I also didn't really like, is one of those things where you're like, I'm going to make a routine of playing this every day because that's what it wants me to do. And you do it for like a week and then you forget about it. And then you play it like, you know, a handful more times over the course of like a month and then put it away forever. But like, what a neat, cool idea, and what a thing that should have just been on phones.
Right.
Or should just be on phones now that...
And they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, right. But they're not Brain Age. They're like, what are those? Like Lumosity or whatever. Hi. That kind of stuff.
Yep. C?
Yes, my C. Mark, are you familiar with a Nintendo game, an unreleased Nintendo game called Cabbage?
No.
Cabbage was a game that was in development in the 90s at Nintendo that was they were targeting the Nintendo 64 DD, and the game is described as a breeding simulator where players breed and raise small creatures that were called cabbages. Okay?
Okay.
There's a murderer's row of developers of Nintendo All-Stars that were working on this game, including Shigesato Itoi from the Mother series, Ishihara from the Pokemon series, Miyamoto and Satoru Iwata, all working on this game. Itoi mentions the game in interviews as early as 1997. And the like big innovations for this game were that as you were raising this cabbage creature, there was a real-time clock. And it needed to write a huge amount of data about like how you were raising this thing and like affecting its behaviors, right? Hence the 64DD. Now the 64DD was only came out in Japan, and this whole like concept got like too unwieldy for this all-star team of developers at Nintendo to actually like put it out this way. But it was evidently very popular within the ranks of Nintendo employees. Cabbage becomes Nintendogs.
No way.
Because it's all of the systems and like knowledge that they were developing for raising these little cabbage things that was going to be on your TV, on your Nintendo 64 with the power of the DD to keep track of how well you're taking care of it. And they were like, hey, with the DS, we have all of that capability in this handheld itself. And forget cabbages. Now you just raise a dog.
That's amazing.
So now you know a little bit about cabbages.
Yeah.
Cabbage, singular.
That's so good. That's such a good C. My C is Chinatown Wars. Grand Theft Auto.
Yep.
Chinatown Wars. This was a Grand Theft Auto game developed by Rockstar, initially for the Nintendo DS. It was announced at E3, with Nintendo, and...
This later came out on PSP, right?
It did. In fact, later, I think the year was released, it came out on PSP. And it, so it was in some ways a throwback to old Grand Theft Auto, like the original game, where it was from an overhead view. It had, this part was not a throwback, but it had cel-shaded graphics. It took advantage of the Nintendo DS's touchscreen for some of, like, the minigame components, like, all this kind of stuff. It reviewed extremely well, and it sold very poorly on the Nintendo DS.
It's a case of, like, the market was Nintendogs and Brain Age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, even though there were so many Nintendo DSs out there.
Yes.
It just, the audience for Chinatown Wars was not there. Eventually was ported to, like you said, the PSP. They changed, like, the graphics. It wasn't cel-shaded. They obviously didn't have the touchscreen stuff. But it, yeah, I remember when it was announced. I remember it being such a big deal. Because occasionally you would have these third-party developers who would take swings like this on both the Nintendo DS and the Wii. And
it's just tough to find that market there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to think of, like, these sort of AAA-style games. AAA-style, like, console-style games that were coming out around this time, either for DS or 3DS or even, like, the Vita and the PSP. Like, I'm just thinking about games like Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker or that Batman Arkham Asylum Blackgate Penitentiary game, whatever it is it's called, Chinatown Wars, and just stuff like that. The Uncharted game that came out on Vita, Golden Abyss, that, like, they never really get represented or repackaged as, like, games on new platforms, even when they do collections, right? Like, the that Blackgate game is never going to be on an Arkham collection, and it's just like, why not trot these, like, give them a fresh coat of paint. It'll be tough, but Nintendo's doing it with, you know, like, Mario versus Donkey Kong or whatever, and just, like, add it like, that's where the, like, forgotten classics are, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we've talked about this with maybe a little bit different, but with the Mega Man Game Boy games,
mm-hmm.
that those in all of the collections and repackaging that
right, there's never
Capcom's
been
yeah. doing recently.
Yeah. Yeah, there's never been a, because there are legacy collections for, like, every other every other Mega Man series, but just not the Game Boy games.
D,
mm-hmm.
My D is for developer's system.
Ah, yes. One of the possible interpretations
yes.
of the titular DS.
Even from the Nintendo of America, like, FAQ for the Nintendo DS, they had an entry that, what does DS stand for?
Yes, I love this.
And this was their response. To our developers, it stands for developer system, since we believe it gives game creators brand new tools which will lead to more innovative games for the world's players. It can also stand for dual screen.
It can also. Which is so, like, because, you know, who do you think that question was being asked on behalf of?
Right, right.
You know, like, on behalf of developers? No, on behalf of consumers. Guess what there are more of? Consumers. Yeah, it's a, I like that there's that there could be ambiguity. It obviously just stands for dual screen. There's that, like, two like rounded squares on top of each other, like one on top of the other. That's sort of like the logo for the DS. That is obviously just like the screens. Like it's referring to the dual screens.
I like it though. I like that the Nintendo DS, like the name Nintendo DS,
yeah.
Was announced as the code name.
Yeah.
When the DS was revealed,
hmm.
and then it just eventually, like, became the name. Because what else are you gonna call it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, otherwise you got to, like, make up something.
Like what?
I don't know. I mean, that's crazy. But I guess, like, were they going through, like, a naming crisis at that point? Like, I don't know. It's a GameCube.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, and also, not to stomp on any potential entries in the future.
Yeah.
But, like, the Nintendo DS, they were hedging their bets in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Right? Because they were like, no. This doesn't replace the Game Boy as a pillar. This is a third pillar.
Right. Which is nuts, because it's backwards compatible, and you're never backwards compatible between pillars.
Yeah.
Like, if you're saying this is a different evolutionary branch, it can't be backwards compatible.
Yeah, but they were they were prepared for this thing to flop hard.
Yeah, I think you're right. My D mark is Dragon Quest IX Sentinels of a Starry Sky, which is a bizarre Dragon Quest game that they really want you to play with other people. It's sort of a proto MMO, and it, you know, it's several years after, like, World of Warcraft, so it's not the first, but it's also, like, there was nothing like this on a handheld before, and no way that you were interacting with Dragon Quest like this. It's a strange little game where you play as like an angel who falls out of the sky, and you like build them up into your Dragon Quest class of your choosing, and you go on these like dungeon runs, hopefully with other people. But Mark, I know you played this game all by yourself, right?
Yeah, I love Dragon Quest IX. This is one that I am hoping that, you know, they've remade up to 8 at this point.
Yes.
And I am hoping that at some point we get a remake of 9.
Well, and this was another thing that I wanted to point out is that, like, this is a game that has not been even ported anywhere else, which you say, like, they've remade everything up to 8. And they've also, like, 10, they've got that offline version coming out. Probably not here, but maybe that'll come here at some point. And 11 obviously has S, Echoes of an Elusive Age Definitive Edition for the Nintendo Switch. So, like, this is the only mainline Dragon Quest game that hasn't even been, like, remastered or ported anywhere.
Yeah, and this was my first Dragon Quest game. And
a crazy fact in and of itself.
I know. I absolutely loved it. Like you said, I played by myself offline, so I never experienced any of the, like, collaborative multiplayer parts of it. But yeah, I love this game. Love it.
It is the only DS game that I currently have in this house. A listener sent it to me, and I can't remember who. If it was you and you're in the Discord, I'm sorry. but shout it out there, and I will thank you on the next episode. I think I thanked him on the show already. But anyway, Dragon Quest IX. E to me now?
Yes.
So I'm going to stay in the same area. And forgive me for the sort of like sideways approach here, but Enix, as in Square Enix, there were a ton. First of all, there's just so much Square Enix in general support on this thing, especially considering what Square Enix's relationship with Nintendo was at around this time, right? They totally bounced off of the Nintendo 64. There's not a Square Enix game on that system. And then like there's drips and drabs on the GameCube, and like there's not nothing on the GBA, but on the DS is really where Square Enix comes back. And in particular, the like Enix side of that, which is to say all these Dragon Quest games, there are remakes of 4, 5, and 6 on DS. I already mentioned 9. There's Rocket Slime, which again, also already mentioned, and Dragon Quest Monsters Joker and Dragon Quest Monsters Joker 2. That's so many of like games from the Enix side, plus from the Square side, Final Fantasy IV remake, Final Fantasy III remake, a sequel to Final Fantasy XII called Revenant Wings, a Final Fantasy Tactics game, The World Ends With You. Square Enix showed up to the Nintendo DS.
Yeah, in a big way.
Huge. They're just all over it. Did you use the game for playing a lot of those games?
Yeah, absolutely. I never played The World Ends With You and still have not played it. Like, I know it's available on mobile. There was the remake for Switch and the sequel and all of that. But that is one that feels like... It's like when I didn't see Gravity in theaters, and I don't know that I'll ever see Gravity now.
That's
like, I feel like I should have played it on Nintendo DS.
You absolutely should have played it on Nintendo DS, because like its whole gimmick was you're controlling two characters simultaneously, one on the top screen, which you are doing with button inputs, and one on the bottom that you are doing with like gestures and like swipes on the touch screen. And I don't really know how they approximate that on other systems, but it doesn't seem like it would have the same effect.
Yeah. That's a great E.
Thank you.
My E is for Ephemeral.
Ooh.
Because, you know, we've lamented on this show before, like, forever is a really long time, but it doesn't look like we're going to see a two-screen system on the horizon. And
unless you believe my predictions.
Unless you believe Patrick's predictions, which, no reason you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But...
also no reason you should.
But like the looking back on it, the Nintendo DS and having those two screens enabled such inventive, unique gameplay.
Yes.
Sometimes in awesome ways, sometimes in ways that we look back now and like laugh. But it's such a interesting system that had such amazing games, and that form factor does not exist anymore.
Right.
And so playing those games are always going to be in a compromised way.
Yeah. I mean, unless you have the original hardware. I still, you know, we talked a long time ago about it would be so nice if they just had a system that was like a legacy handheld system that was just designed to play DS and 3DS games that was like nice, you know, that looked like a grown-up's piece of technology that would be like sturdier than a DS, but you know, not look like a doorstop in the way that like a 2DS would, and just like a store to download all those games. Because like, yeah, it's sad to think that, like, especially with the 3DS eShop gone now, that it's just like, yeah, you just like can't these games are inaccessible.
I guess our one hope is that Analog or a company like that eventually creates a dual screen system that can play both 3DS and DS games.
Yeah, I guess that's but they're so far away from that, right?
It like, feels that way, yeah.
And then, like, what are you going to pre-order it and get it 4 years later? Mark, your F.
My F is for 5, because that's the number of Nintendo DSs that I bought.
Yes.
During the Nintendo DS's life. So I owned an original DS, and then I got that for Christmas. And then when the Nintendo DS Lite came out...
Wait, so someone, went and got the game for Black Friday? Like, on Black Friday, probably, for you?
I don't know when they got it. But yeah, my parents got me a original Nintendo DS. And then, 18 months later, when the Nintendo DS Lite was released, which, if the difference between... The Nintendo DS Lite was when the Nintendo DS broke out, because the original...
That's when it got cool.
The original Nintendo DS was ugly. Like, it looked like a prototype. You know, like, it was chunky.
Yeah.
It was like a tank. It was not sleek. And then...
It was like if you took two Pop-Tarts and painted them black and connected them via a hinge.
And then...
Or blue?
Nintendo was blue? Like... Then Nintendo was like... Let's just steal the Apple iPod aesthetic.
Yeah.
And it worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
The Nintendo DS Lite was a much sleeker system, was really cool looking. It came in like polar white or black, I think. I think it came in two different ones.
At launch, it was just the white. A couple months later, the coral pink and the onyx came out.
Got it. I remember the DS Lite being very difficult to acquire. So I remember... checking Target like every day to see if they got shipments. Finally got one, so that's number 2. And then I got the when Phantom Hourglass came out, they released a bundle that was a special edition Nintendo DS Lite that was gold, and on the top, like top of it, it had the Triforce. It had a gold stylus, and then it came bundled with the game itself, and I bought that. And then I bought a DSi when that was released. And then I bought a DSi XL when that was released.
Why not?
And so that's the most I've ever bought of a single system ever.
Yeah.
And God willing, it will be the most I ever buy ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably pretty safe, right? Like, you're not much of a collector.
I'm not.
You have purchased 2 Switches at this point, though.
I have, and I've... not quite as invested as your I will buy anything Nintendo puts out this year, but I have said that I am not going to wait if they release like new hardware,
right?
Like, or like a hardware revision,
right?
Like, I'm just gonna snap that up immediately.
By the way, update on that, I was able to secure a pre-order for my Sora.
Congratulations.
I got that today. So I'm still look. There's a set of Xenoblade Chronicles 3 amiibo, Noah and Mio, characters I do not know and probably will never know. But I'm still keeping an eye out if pre-orders pop for those. They come out pretty soon, so it's looking less likely that I'm gonna get that. But I feel like it starts with Sora, right?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yep.
So that was the five?
That's the five.
Okay.
And I don't own any of them anymore. And what I was doing is, because I did not have the money to just like buy five
systems.
Yeah,
you're probably trading them in. Yeah.
So I was trading them in, selling them on like Craigslist or something. I really wish I would have held on to the special edition, the Zelda special edition DS Lite.
Yeah.
And the fact that I don't own any of them anymore. I guess I still own a 3DS that can play DS games. But I don't like own any cartridges or anything. But I just really wish that I had held on to that Zelda Special Edition.
Do you want to borrow my copy of Dragon Quest IX? My F is for freeloader mode, which isn't what it was called. It was called like download play. But just the idea that you could play multiple people on their DSs with only one cart. You could play up to 8 people at a time in Mario Kart DS. With only one person owning the cart. All the other players had to play as Shy Guys, but still, you could do it. That was also the only way to play as a Shy Guy. There were just a lot of games like that that allowed you to do this download play, which, again, I'm calling freeloader mode. But that's, you know, we had a conversation last year about my brother-in-law buying Switches for his daughters. And we're like, one of the problems with getting DS Lites for both of them is that if they want to play Mario Kart together, they both need a copy of Mario Kart. Guess what wasn't true with the DS? Only one person could have that cartridge, and you could both be playing Mario Kart.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet. I remember when that came out, just the idea of being able to do that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that still exists sometimes. Like, on one of the Switch Mario parties, something like that is possible, right?
Yeah, yes, I think so. I really do think that, especially for games that require, like, the two systems to talk to each other, to have multiplayer, that aren't, like, for, like, a Mario Party game, like, why isn't that standard? That, like, don't make people buy two copies of this Mario Party game so they can play together.
Right.
F back to me. G. Yes. Okay. G. Hey, I'm a broken record. I love the Game & Watch support that is on the DS. Sort of unprecedented, and is the only place where Nintendo represents Game & Watch games as close to what they looked like as possible, right? Like using the power of 3D graphics to replicate what it would look like to have these like little LCD guys, hovering over the like art that's behind it. Obviously, there were the Game & Watch galleries before, which are extremely limited in their graphical presentation because they're Game Boy games. Every time Game & Watch games appeared on the DS, they tried to make them look like the actual hardware and what it actually would look like to play these games. Here are the Game & Watch, the astounding Game & Watch things on DS. Number one, Game & Watch Collection 1, which was available as a My Nintendo Club like reward. You spent points to get this thing. It had 3 different dual screen Game & Watch games. They are Donkey Kong, Greenhouse, and Oil Panic. All great games. Greenhouse is my favorite Game & Watch game. So an incredible little collection there. Game & Watch Collection 2, which was also a My Nintendo Club reward, had 2 games on it. Parachute and Octopus, both are single screen games, but then there was also a mode that combined the two games, so you're like parachuting, and if you don't land in the boat, that it goes like into a game of Octopus, which is awesome. That game is not playable anywhere else except for on this free My Nintendo Club thing.
So did they like send you a cart? Like,
yeah,
a game
send
cart?
A little cart. Yeah. Both of these things are exceedingly rare and expensive if you want to try and find them now. And then on top of that, the DSi, there were DSiWare versions of a handful of Game & Watch games. They are Ball, Flagman, Vermin, Judge, Helmet, Chef, Donkey Kong Jr., Mario Cement Factory, and Manhole. They're all single screen games, which I always thought was a little weird. Why not? It's a dual screen system. Why not show off some more dual screen games? But I mean, it's the first set of gold games, which are like classic, right? Ball, Flagman, Vermin, Judge, and then like Helmet is one of the like rarer ones, and then Donkey Kong Jr. and Mario Cement Factory are two of my like other favorites. So, you know, just on the DS and DSi, it's got like most of my favorite Game & Watch games. And I mean, some of them are my favorite because those are games that I've been able to play because they were available on the DS. Again, I don't know why Nintendo is not, like, since these Game & Watch galleries and Game & Watch collections and the DSi games, like, they just haven't really represented them as playable experiences, and I don't know why.
My G is for game cards. So this is what the, like, carts that you would put into the Nintendo DS, like, how you would play games. Mm-hmm. They were officially called game cards, and if you've never seen a DS cart before, or a DS game card before, they are very similar to, like, SD cards. Like,
now,
something like that.
Hold on a minute. Are you saying card with a D?
Yes, yes.
But that's not what we said when we ranked them. We called them carts.
That could be true, but they're game cards.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on.
That's what Wikipedia tells me.
Okay, okay.
And so what I think is interesting about this is that it's like the Nintendo 64 era with the PlayStation, but in reverse, where the PlayStation, the PSP, had used like these UMD discs, and so its handheld had to have a disc reader, and Nintendo had their game cards, which I'm going to keep saying until I am told otherwise. they, you know, like, for a handheld system, the cards turned out to be the better choice because they, like, one of the problems with PSPs is that the disc reader would become unreliable. You know, it would break pretty often because that is really fragile hardware in a handheld system.
Well, it's fragile hardware in like any sort of any sort of machine. Anything that has to spin a disc is going to naturally wear out more because it's physically moving. The rest of it can all be like electronic stuff. That's got to be mechanical.
And it's not that the PlayStation, the PSP, was unsuccessful, but you have to cast your mind back to a time before the Nintendo DS and before the PSP were released, and they were just announced. They weren't in anybody's hands yet, and it looked like, to an outside observer, that it was going to be the Nintendo 64 and the PlayStation all over again, that the PSP was going to come in and eat Nintendo's lunch. And that is not at all what happened. The PSP, for as successful as it was, like, didn't cast a shadow over the success of the Nintendo DS. And so just interesting to see that dynamic reversed when a lot of the variables were the same.
I will confirm game card is correct. Maybe I just got myself like twisted a little bit. Did we rank it as card before?
I can't remember. I can't remember either. We'll have to go back, listen to it, and then debug ourselves.
I'm not
going to
do that. I was just looking at the instruction manual for the DS Lite, and it is definitely the DS game card slot. So that game card is what they're and they refer to the game pack slot for the Game Boy Advance.
Yes,
thing.
This was when they made the transition.
Yeah, and also the game pack slot cover, that like big plug.
Oh right,
that you just like jam it in there so that there wasn't a big gaping hole in the bottom of your system.
Next up is H, which is mine is Hero, as in Big Hero 6 Battle in the Bay,
sure,
which was released October 28th, 2014, the last Nintendo DS game to be published.
Wow.
Almost 10 years exactly, by just like a few weeks from the system's release.
Wow. So they really wanted to put that Big Hero 6 game out, and we're like, we can't justify this being a 3DS game. That's wild.
That is a really long time. Like, and you know, there are now like novelty releases for the Game Boy Advance and or the original Game sure. Boy or the NES or something.
We're not there with the DS yet, though.
No. Mm. But and so just to think that like new third party games were being published for the Nintendo DS 10 years after it was released tells you how like many of those systems were out there. It's like how Just Dance was on the Wii forever.
Absolutely. Mark, that to me and what I'm about to say is evidence to me that H was a hard one for this system because I'm going with Harvest Moon DS Cute. Harvest Moon DS, not a particularly well-regarded Harvest Moon game. It's the first entry in the series without the series creator, Yasuhiro Wada. But this cute version came out a couple months later, after the original game's release, like 9 months later, less than a year, and it had a female protagonist, and a couple of the plot details were changed. It's called Harvest Moon DS Cute.
Not bad.
I honestly, more releases of games 9 months later with the subtitle cute, please.
Hey, what changed in this one?
It's cuter. Old one, not as cute as it could have been. Which brings me to my I, and that's got to be Iwata, because Satoru Iwata was president of Nintendo at the time that the DS was released. It's the first piece of hardware released under his tenure as president of Nintendo. And, you know, we've already talked about how, like, it represents, like, a change in direction for Nintendo, that they would, you know, eventually have to, like, sort of swing back a little bit in the other direction. But, like, under his leadership, Nintendo makes this big change towards seeking bigger audiences and having more accessible gaming experiences. And I think his influence in that, making those goals of the company, can't be understated. And he was just such a cool guy. And I like to think of the DS as like an extension of his game design philosophy, and his like relationship to consumers is like expressed through the DS.
Yeah, that's such a good way of putting that. Well, another thing that I think is interesting with Iwata and his philosophies is he's also the one who led Nintendo away from like chasing top of the line graphics.
Yes,
the Nintendo DS, the Wii, like all of it has been even to this day, right? Like Nintendo games look good, the hardware is capable, but it is not bleeding edge. That was a very
intentional
decision by Iwata and Nintendo at that time to be like, they're diminishing returns in chasing graphical fidelity. We have to like find other avenues to express ourselves in games.
Yeah, and other ways to be excellent at making games, right? Like a Nintendo game is never going to like have the highest fidelity, but like it can still look better than other games out there just because it's designed better. And yeah, it's just a different mentality, and you know, he's not the only person there doing it, and he's not the reason why that's how Nintendo functions or how their priorities are like that, but he's a huge part of it.
My eye is for the Nintendo DSi, which was the second revision of the system after the Nintendo DS and the Nintendo DS Lite. And it, for me, was a novelty because it was the Wii was released by this point. And so a Nintendo system with an online store and like a home screen and all that stuff was not new.
Yeah.
But in having it in handheld form and the promise, maybe not like the delivery on that promise, but the promise of exclusive DSi hardware and like games and things that you could
software
yeah. mm-hmm. and games and apps that you could only access through the Nintendo DSi store. That was a vision I was sold on. It was thinner than the Nintendo DS Lite. It had cameras.
Mm-hmm. You could get those Game & Watch games on there.
You could get those Game & Watch games on there. But yeah, the Nintendo DSi.
Very good. I never owned one. No. The DSiWare games that I've played on my 3DS. And it was always just kind of nice that like that functionality carried forward on the 3DS. Of course, it's all gone now. I think I'd sort of moved on from the DS by the time the DSi. What year did the DSi come out?
2009 in Japan and 2010 in the US and EU.
Okay. So we were already like into smartphones and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, the App Store existed by that point.
Yeah, so that's sort of the death knell for the DS.
My J is for JRPGs.
Sure.
We've
touched on it a little bit already. I apologize.
No. Yeah, but in my life at this time, I was playing a lot of Japanese RPGs for the first time. So I would, I didn't own a PlayStation. I didn't own a PlayStation 2. So I had borrowed my friend, and I didn't have a backwards compatible PS3. And so I borrowed my friend's PlayStation 2 or PlayStation 1. I actually can't remember now. But anyways, I was playing so many of these classic PlayStation RPGs for the first time, like Dragon Quest, or not Dragon Quest, like Final Fantasy 9 and Final Fantasy 8, like experiencing all of those. Plus, on the DS, I was playing the DS version of Chrono Trigger, which
I didn't mention before, yeah.
Right, which I think is, like, the perfect version of that game. You mentioned all the Dragon Quest games on there that I was experiencing for the first time. The Nintendo DS had a remake of Final Fantasy III, which was the first time that a version of that game had ever been playable outside of Japan. So, yeah, it was just it was like the perfect intersection between like what the Nintendo DS was capable of and what, I don't know. I don't really know what exactly, maybe it was just the popularity of the system and ease of developing for it, but whatever it was, there were so many games for the Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
And so many RPGs and so many, I think because it was still like cheap to develop for,
absolutely,
especially compared to companies who were spending a lot of money in the difficult transition to HD development in this generation. Here was the Nintendo DS that you had these old library of games that could relatively easily be ported to it on a massively successful system worldwide
where people were buying games too.
It just added up to an embarrassment of riches. When
again,
to RPGs.
There's a sequel to Final Fantasy XII on this thing. Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
Doesn't make any sense. My J, Mark, is jutting out of the GBA slot of the DS Lite. Because, man, look, you could play Game Boy Advance games on your DS Lite, but because it was far less chonky than the original DS, it was just, it couldn't fit the cartridge. It didn't fit all the way in, so it just, like, stuck out the bottom. I remember playing, like, Golden Sun on my DS Lite and being like, I can't, put it down, or, like, if I put it in a pocket, like, it's got this thing, this extra appendage just sticking out.
That's really funny.
And, they never really had a solve for it, and you wouldn't really want it because it would have made the system bigger.
Right, yeah. That's really funny. I didn't use the backwards functionality of the backwards compatibility functionality of the Nintendo DS all that much. I think by the time that I had like a Lite, I probably like sold my Game Boy Advance library. I'm not even really sure what I must have sold it. I don't really know what happened to it.
It is weird that like backwards compatibility feels like it is relevant for like a year. And then after that, it's like, yeah, who cares though? I'm not going to like, I remember thinking the same thing about like the Wii U of like, okay, well I'll hang on to that forever. Cause it'll also just also be my Wii. Right. But like when you play a Wii game on your Wii U and like, you got to put it into Wii mode, it just looks bad. It looks like, I don't know, like slimy on the screen or something. And I feel like the same is true of like the 3DS using it to play DS games, where it's just like, this isn't right. And so even as like a, for like archivist reasons, it doesn't really match the experience of having the original hardware.
Yeah. For me, at least, like, we've talked about on the show, I'm like, the next Nintendo hardware needs to have backwards compatibility with the Switch.
Yes.
And, but you're right. It's like, I love the idea of that, but never in my life have I really taken advantage of it.
Yeah, and I think the difference may be just like where we are with games now. Like, I will absolutely play a PlayStation 4 game on my PlayStation 5 and probably not even notice that that's what I'm doing, you know? So, like, I think maybe now the like difference in technology or like the difference in my ability to perceive things is such that like backwards compatibility now seems like pretty useful, but like from generations back, it's like the leaps were too big.
We're on to K.
Mike?
No, because I just did Nintendo DSi, right?
No. Wait, did you do a J? No, you did JRPGs. Oh, and then
right.
I did jutting out of the GBA slot. I'm right on this
you're
one.
Right, you're right. You're right.
My K is Kageyama. Professor Kageyama, who is the person who hosts Professor Kageyama's maths training, colon, the 100-cell calculation method.
Ah, yes, of course.
Released in the U.S. as personal trainer, colon, math. Boo! This is a math training game on the DS, developed by Jupiter, the people who make all of the great Picross games. But yeah, what a name. Professor Kageyama's maths training, the 100-cell calculation method.
I bet if I had played that game, I'd be better at math, because I would know the 100-cell calculation method.
Yeah.
But I don't know that right now.
I mean, it sounds like something out of an anime, right?
It does.
He has mastered the 100-cell calculation method.
Yeah. Much better than, what was the American
personal
name?
Trainer,
yeah,
colon,
boo.
Math.
Yeah, boo to that.
I just want to one more time. Professor Kageyama's maths training, the 100-cell calculation method.
It's like poetry.
It is. Wonderful. Now your K.
Okay,
Mark.
My K is for King, because the Nintendo DS is the best-selling handheld and best-selling Nintendo hardware of all time. Not as much as the PlayStation 2. The PlayStation 2 is the overall champion.
People want a DVD player, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, but the Nintendo DS has officially sold 154.02 million units over its life. That is a lot of Nintendo DS's.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, like, the Switch is a popular thing, but like it would need to like sell at the rate it's been selling for another like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, so then
to catch up,
the Switch maybe will overtake it. It's currently at 132.46 million.
Yeah,
so it's about 22 million away. Yeah, so
right, well, I guess like it sort of depends on what the next piece of hardware is called. And if they choose to keep counting it as Nintendo Switch.
If they pull a Game Boy Color.
Yes,
and
that's
they
right.
Just bundle it together. But, I mean, it's difficult to overstate how successful the Nintendo DS was.
Yeah. Professor Kageyama's maths training, the 100-cell calculation method.
Well, speaking of professors, I'm going to do my L, which is for Professor Layton. A franchise that kicked off in Japan in 2007 and in the U.S. in 2008, with Professor Layton and the Curious Village from developer Level 5, which has gone on to spawn, you know, like two sequels that starred Professor Layton, and then actually probably more than that, because it goes like to how Professor Layton and his ward, cousin, best friend, I don't know, little kid companion, how they met
Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How they met.
And Layton has also crossed over with Phoenix Wright. Yeah.
Yeah. That is true in the Ace Attorney series. So the Professor Layton games, again, a series that I think at like now exists on mobile phone, but at the time could only exist on something like
totally.
The Nintendo DS. And I don't think would have the life that it has had without the Nintendo DS. It's a puzzle solving game with like a narrative on top of it, like and it's presented in the style of like a mix between Japanese and European animation. The music is,
it feels very Tintin to me.
It
does. Does that
yes.
make sense?
Yeah, I agree. The music is outstanding. I remember like the puzzles being a lot of fun, the story being interesting. I have not played one of these games for a really long time, so I don't know that I know that they announced a new one recently, and I think that's still a few years off, but I have very fond memories of playing the original Professor Layton game.
Remember they made a like a Lady Layton game?
Yes.
Uh-huh. There's a female Layton out there?
Yeah. The series has gone a lot of different places, for sure.
Which now to my L, which is going to be, wait, hold on. I want to make sure I got the name of this right. I do. It is called Learn with Pokemon : Typing Adventure. Are you familiar with Learn with Pokemon Typing Adventure?
No.
Okay. So it is kind of like a, the Pokemon Snap, right? Except instead of taking pictures of Pokemon, you are capturing them by means of typing on a keyboard. So it comes with a Bluetooth keyboard that connects to the game, so you can actually type, and like it teaches you typing a la House of the Dead, or typing of the dead. Thank you. And so it, like, that's what it is. Now, Mark, you may be asking yourself, Bluetooth, I didn't know the DS had Bluetooth. It doesn't. How is this accomplished?
A dongle?
No, there's Bluetooth in the game card.
Whoa.
So this is a classic Nintendo thing of, like, don't have enough technology in the hardware, put it in the cartridge. That's why Super Mario Brothers 3 is able to scroll diagonally. That's why a number of different things are possible.
Star Fox?
That's why Star Fox is possible. Yes, thank you for giving me a second example. I couldn't even think of a second. But yeah, there's a Bluetooth. The cart itself is Bluetooth enabled, which allows it to connect to this keyboard.
That's incredible.
And you can type.
Is it a full size keyboard?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's a Mario teaches typing, but for Pokemon.
So somebody could be using this keyboard to type at work right now.
Oh my God. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I assume it was designed only to interface with that game, but I have no idea.
Well, if somebody out there,
yes,
has this keyboard,
try it out,
and yeah, type us an email,
right,
with that keyboard,
and say it
and
worked.
Let us know,
right,
yeah,
and then like Pika incredible. Or something. Learn with Pokemon Typing Adventure. Okay, and then this will be my last entry here. My M. Which has got to be Metroid Prime Hunters. One of the stranger things to happen in this era was the Metroid Prime games were a great success by Metroid standards on the GameCube. Metroid was cool. Retro wanted to get in on making games for the cool new handheld. And so they made a, like, sort of four-player online arena shooter in Metroid Prime Hunters that barely worked. The inputs for the game were, like, you move, like, forward and backward and strafe using the D-pad, and then you, like, change your perspective by, like, moving around with the stylus.
Well, and I'm pretty sure that the game... So, the original DS that I had came with a demo,
yes,
for this, and I'm pretty sure that the game shipped with a thumb, like something you put on your thumb, so your thumb could act as a stylus,
right?
And like input, yeah,
right. And that same thing could work for like Mario 64 DS.
So that way you could like hold, you could be holding your Nintendo DS with both hands and use your thumb to control the bottom screen.
Right. What did you ever have that weird little nub thing?
I don't think so, because I don't think it was included. My memory is that it wasn't included with like the demo, only
right.
the full game, and I never bought the full game.
I had the full game, and I didn't have this thumb thing, so I don't know.
Maybe it did come with the original DS.
Or you had to like buy it separately. Maybe it was never packed in with anything. But Prime Hunters, I remember going to. So I was on vacation with my friends in Castine, Maine, and I remember going, this is like during the summer, and there was like, you know, not a lot to do, which was sort of like the point of it, but I wanted to play video games, and I remember going to the Castine Library, so I could sit outside and hop on their Wi-Fi with my DS and play matches of Metroid Prime Hunters against randos online, which is a just wild thing to think that I was actually able to do that with the DS.
That's, yeah. Man, this was something that they showed off in, like, demo reels from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know, and to show, like, whoa, how cool and capable this new system was. One small thing I wanted to correct. Nintendo Software Technology developed it.
Oh, it was not a retro game.
Retro
okay.
game, yeah.
That makes sense. It doesn't really have the, like, retro polish. And I don't know that it could. Like, I don't think the DS was capable of, like, displaying any polish that they would have applied to it. But so did you never played the full version of this game?
I don't think so.
So strange. Like, between it and Federation Forces, there's just this, like, weird offshoot of multiplayer Metroid Prime games that, like, no one likes. Feel like we need to get our hands on these things and play them.
Federation Forces, for sure.
Yes.
Was this the only Metroid game on Nintendo DS?
Only if you choose to ignore Metroid Prime Pinball.
Which, of course, I don't, because right. I know it'd be part of the theoretical Metroid Prime collection.
Yeah, well, so the thing that I'll just reiterate that the thing that I want to happen is for Nintendo to put out the Metroid Prime trilogy that is Hunters, Pinball, and Federation
That's
Forces.
That's right. That's right.
The That's trilogy right. nobody wants.
Uh-huh. That's right. My final entry for part one in our ABCs of Nintendo DS.
Wow.
Is Mario Kart DS. Still one of my favorite Mario Kart games. The first Mario Kart game you could go online with.
Yep.
The first Mario Kart game that introduced the idea of retro courses.
Yeah.
Had four cups wow. of new courses, four cups of retro courses. It had like battle mode, and then it had a single player like mode outside of racing called missions, where you would have to do things like drive through gates or you right. know like drive through all of the gates in a certain amount of time. There would be like boss battles and things like that. It's such a I think it's one of the best Mario Kart games, but I haven't played it in so long
right.
that I don't know if it actually holds up that well. But I love it to death.
I mean, I think it's fair to say that like most like every Mario Kart game feels like a revelation, right? Where you're like, wow, this is what Mario Kart can be. But to experience this on a handheld system that is going online, like it's like a paradigm shifter, where it's like that every Mario Kart game since then has been like, yes, of course you can go online. Yes, of course there are retro tracks. Like, yes, of course everything that's great about this game gets carried over into future ones. Mario Kart is not a franchise that is like known for huge leaps between entries, right? There's just like little improvements, little changes. But DS was like a thing where they like really made a difference.
Yeah, being able to go online, I just remember that feeling epic.
It's end of the world stuff, right? Where you're just like, oh, everything is different now. A phenomenal game, and for a long time was like that. Brain Age and Nintendogs that were like, I just had those three games with me all the time and was always playing one of them. All right. Well, so those are our A through M's of the ABCs of Nintendo DS. Mark, let's close this out. Gotta say, strange no one used their E for Elite Beat Agents.
I've never played it.
Okay, I thought maybe that was a Mark that was a Mark kind
of
game.
No, that I think it totally is. It's just one of the sad, I've just never had the opportunity to experience it type things.
That could be your Pikmin.
That could be my Pikmin.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Come back next week where we will be doing N through Z of the ABCs of the Nintendo DS. Thank you to our 16-bit patrons, Connor McCabe, Patrice Millett, David Hendley, Alias X, and Kyle Seaborn. We appreciate your support. We appreciate everyone's support. Remember, you can join our Discord if you would like an invitation. All you gotta do is email us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com, and I will send you an invitation. Anthony DeLuca made our logo, and our theme music is provided by 8-Bit Betty. You can get more of his music by going to 8bitbetty.com or by listening right now. For my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Ehlers saying thank you for listening.